If you think passionate operatic spectacles are limited to the Venetian past, think again. Or pick up a book called The City of Falling Angels by John Barrand. His first book was called Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. It profiled the city of Savannah and spent years on the bestseller list. The new book takes on Venice and Venetians. And as John Barrand told Anne Strainchamps, the city's old magic is still there.
The sensation of being in Venice is like being back in the 15th and 16th centuries. No cars. It is a theatrical setting. You think you're on the stage in a drama. Venice does look like a stage set. So I think this encourages people who live in Venice to act out their dramas, to embellish, to create their own imaginary selves.
Well, Venice itself is a city in which it's hard to kind of get at the truth of the city. I mean, in so many different ways, because that's the subtext of your book, really. For instance,
yes.
This idea, I think, that tourists for several centuries now have had of Venice as crumbling, the decaying, dying city. Is that what you would say about Venice, or did you discover that that's kind of one of the stories?
I actually came to realize that Venice has survived. It's a story of survival, not of decay.
What about the famous Aqua Altas, the rising water, the fear that Venice is just slowly sinking into the ocean?
Venice was sinking. For 30 years in the 20th century, they were pumping water from under Venice for drinking water, and then they realized they were sucking the city down. They lost about a foot, and they stopped doing that. The sinking isn't the problem now. It's the rising sea level that's the problem. Still, they have plans to build dikes that are movable, that can come up from the bottom of the lagoon and block the three entrances to the lagoon from the Adriatic Sea, block out the sea when the tide is too high. They've been arguing about that solution for 25 years. Eventually, something will be done, but they haven't started building yet.
One of the stories you tell in the book, it's really kind of the keynote story around which a lot of others revolve, is about the destruction of one of the most revered pieces of Venetian history, La Fenice, Venice's famous opera house. Will you, first of all, explain the kind of almost mythic status that the Fenice has in Venice?
Well, the Fenice was the opera house where five of Verdi's operas made their debut, and literally scores of other operas did too. It was one of the birthplaces of opera. Venice once had 12 opera houses, all operating at the same time. With this fire, however, they didn't have any left. And it was a devastating blow. Furthermore, and this is worse, they discovered without the Fenice, they didn't have any major stage in Venice for live performances. So they were faced with the actuality of being a dead city.
How is it that the Fenice came to burn in the first place?
Well, that was the big question right after the fire. And the prosecutor assumed at first that it was a combination of negligence and an accident. The Fenice had been closed, actually, when the fire happened. It was undergoing renovation all throughout the building. There had been stacks of flammable material next to all kinds of solvents, and it was very, very bad. The whole thing could have gone up in smoke, and he assumed that that's what had happened. Someone had tossed a cigarette or whatever. But then there began to be suspicions that perhaps this had been set, because there were a lot of mysterious coincidences. The canals around the Fenice had been drained of water shortly before the renovation began, because the city wanted to dredge the canals, clean them. Fire chief had warned the mayor, if you're going to drain the canals around the Fenice, at least find an alternate source of water should there be a fire.
And yeah, because they use the water from the canals.
Exactly.
Right. They don't have a fire hydrant system.
They don't have hydrants, and they use the canal water. Exactly. And he didn't take action. So that struck some people as perhaps suspicious. The smoke alarm had been disconnected the night of the blaze. And finally, the experts, in looking at all of the evidence, were convinced that there had been arson involved, that someone had set this fire on purpose.
But this turned into, I mean, a sort of typically theatrical event, the debate over the arson. There were a couple of electricians who were finally taken into custody. But it all played out like a soap opera, didn't it?
It did, and it's remarkable. The Italian justice system is quite different from ours. The prosecutor, who was quite a fascinating man, he developed a theory that there were two electricians working in the Fenice who were behind in their work, and they were going to be fined. And the theory is that the electricians, the two of them, set the blaze in order to destroy their own work area, not the whole theater, just so they wouldn't have to make the deadline and pay the fine. There was another theory that went along with that one, and that was that the two electricians were paid by some unknown people to burn the whole Fenice so that those people, whoever they were, could help in the rebuilding of the Fenice and make a lot of money that way. And as it turned out, the two young men were convicted. The evidence was, at first, it wasn't overwhelming, but it got to be. However, when the sentence was passed, the judge made a public remark that amazed me. He said, "These two young men were not alone. There were others in the shadows." It astonished me because there had been no charges, and so I went to see the judge, and he said, "That's the way we feel. We don't have the evidence, but it seems to us that that's what happened." I went to see the prosecutor. He said, "Yes, I have a strong suspicion that these two young men were paid, but the link between them and the money is one man, and he has just died. I don't have enough evidence to pursue it." And I said, "So you're going to drop it?" He said, "Unfortunately, we have to."
So now it's going to become yet another of the mysteries that adds to the aura of Venice.
The ambiguities. Edith Wharton, I forget the line, but she mentioned that Americans had, in America, a clear air of certainty. The Europeans dwell in ambiguities. And we're not satisfied with a non-answer or a partial answer. They're very used to it. They don't see life in black and white the way we tend to. Much more subtle.
John Barron's book about Venice is called The City of Falling Angels. He spoke with Anne Strangechamps.